Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the Riptide. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy. Hey, my brothers and sisters. I'm Jamil Zainashev.
And I'm Mike Persine, and you're listening to Brew Strong.
Nice job there. Today, we have a great guest in Adam Mills, and he is a brewer at
Sonder Brewing.
Sonder Brewing, yes. I had that information. I wrote it down. And then I neglected to have it in my collection of stuff in front of me for the show. But that's why, you know, you can tell I'm a professional. I've been doing this for a long time. And Adam, you're doing shows as well. You have a YouTube channel that you've got, what, 400 videos on there? Quite a lot of content.
Yeah. I'm making, I have a channel called Adam Makes Beer over on YouTube. Same thing over on Instagram, but really all my content goes up there, and it's anywhere from informational brew house, content, anything from how I break down clean fermenters, how I transfer beers, how I dry hop full brew days, grain to glass stuff. And then including brewer interviews that I do and some live stream Q&A stuff. So, yeah.
Nice. Well, and I see you're also sponsored by Blickman Engineering. John Absolutely. Blickman, wonderful guy, just, you know, salt of the earth. And really, you know, he believes in taking care of Michael's also got some Blickman gear. You know, he believes in, you know, giving back to the community, you know, that he works with. So whether that is, you know, the home brewer who's just starting out and wants some quality gear, you know, or the more advanced home brewer who's ready to get up to, you know, one of his Blickman towers, or, you know, somebody who's going to the pro level and, you know, using one of his, you know, tall boy, you know, fermenters that'll fit through a 36 inch door and, you know, nest nice and tight up against the wall. You know, he's got the whole range covered, and he loves to support him by sponsoring shows. And, you know, that is money. That is cash that, you know, could go to his bottom line. He's using it to provide you guys with useful content to make you better brewers. So don't take that lightly. If you have a chance, please, you know, send him a email, feedback@blickmanengineering.com. And tell John Blickman how much you appreciate that he's sponsoring shows like ours and Adam's to help you with, you know, great content that will improve your brewing. So I think that's just a great, great thing that he does. And he's done it for us for, Jesus, 15, 16 years, which is a lot of,
yeah, man,
a lot of cheddar to apply to, you know, stupid ramblings of me and other folks. So. Yeah, other folks aren't so stupid. Me, I'm stupid. And today, we're going to talk about thiolized yeasts. So, Adam, tell me, you know, what is a thiolized yeast?
Yeah, and so, you know, really, it's. I think originally it's kind of this outcropping of, you know, how much fruit expression can we get into our beers, especially when we think about IPA, but then on into other styles, there's use case for this stuff as well. Essentially what thiolized yeast does is it has and a couple of different companies do it different ways, but essentially they're modified yeasts that have the capacity to free bound thiols. And what that means is thiols are essentially sulfur compounds that are perceivable at a very low level. It does not take a lot of them in order to express in the beer. And they can come from malt, they can come from hops, they can come from other adjuncts. And what these yeasts do is they free them, unlock them, and then make them expressive in the finished beer.
Now, by unlock, Michael, you know, you're a chemist. Tell me what he means by unlocking the thiols. What's happening there?
Yeah. So in their current state, as they're, you know, before they're acted on by the enzyme, they're bound to larger molecules, either like S-cysteine or it's a glutathione or something like that. And so they're not able to be tasted. And by using these enzymes that are expressed through the yeast, they actually attack that sulfur carbonyl bond and separate right there at that bond. And then now you basically have your cysteine go this way and your thiol compound go this way. And now that thiol compound can be...
It's able to interact with the taste receptors, mm-hmm. or the aroma receptors, right. in our heads. Yeah.
Like you guys are saying, it's a really low taste threshold. We're talking nanograms per liter, which is very, very, very tiny.
Right. But everybody wants more. I mean, the thing I keep telling people in brewing is the customer wants the fruitiest possible IPA you can produce. And the only reason that they're really a lot of times looking at IPA is because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the grapefruit and, you know, mango and things like that. And it's, you know, really delicious, of course, but, you know, the customer wants as much as possible. So, Adam, you're telling me this is a yeast that will get me more of that. What kind of flavors are we really talking about?
You know, it can be a range. And what I find most commonly is explicitly passion fruit. But they'll also say guava, other tropical type notes, mm-hmm. things like that. But yeah, I with the way I've been treating it, it leans very heavily in the passion fruit direction.
Nice. Passion fruit's a great flavor to have in.
Sure.
Yeah. If I could throw a couple more in there, there's also, you know, grapefruit, gooseberry, guava, and then even there's certain thiols that express themselves in like a black currant or even come across caddy. Mm-hmm. Has been really, you know, so there's all kinds of them in there. But the ones we want are the passion fruit ones.
Well, and mainly we've been using hops to get this, especially, you know, a lot of the Southern Hemisphere hops we're using at, you know, $25 a pound, you know, crazy prices like that. Or using actual passion fruit or, you know, black currants or whatever in order to get that. The interesting thing for me, you mentioned, Adam, was that thiols actually are in malt as well.
Yeah. And this seems to be, well, first of all, this whole thing is emerging. All right. Like what we're understanding about this is emerging stuff. And if you've not checked out any content that Dr. Laura Burns from Omega has done on this, I know she's on several podcasts discussing this. There's different articles online. Of course, you can go to the websites as well to dig in on this stuff. But and Dr. Burns will suggest that you try a lot of different base malts. And for some reason, she also talks about trying local varietals as well. And it's kind of a nod to the fact that they don't seem to give too much information as to why, other than the fact that there may be just more bound precursor in various varietals, how they're handled, things like that. But yeah, I do think that's one of the interesting tweaks with this. And ultimately, it comes into something that we'll probably talk about later as a way that you can help to dial this up and down, the intensity of this thiol expression. You can do that with your base malt and blending in some adjuncts, some different things like that. So yeah, the malt aspect of it is interesting.
I think malt, in a way, it gets, you know, kind of, well, no, I don't think it gets really, yeast always got kind of pushed to the background. Sure. You know, people focused on malt and water and they didn't really care too much about yeast. But I think now more focus is available on yeast and more focus is on water. And I think malt's kind of sliding into the background. Oh, and hops were always at the top. But, you know, malt, where it's grown, you know, determines what kind of minerals are in the malt that are useful for fermentation, but also, you know, a lot of other compounds and how they're grown, how much sun it got, you know, the wind, the rain, the air around it all affects what is in that malt. And so where it was grown and, you know, how it was malted will really make a big difference in, you know, a lot of the, you know, the compounds that are in the mash or in the wort, you know, later on. Now, my understanding, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves, but my understanding is that you want to use the palest malt for more, you know, thiol expression. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've heard some stuff in that direction as well with it. And so, you know, leaning more into your pils malts, different things like that. And again, even with your pils malts, make sure to be checking your spec sheets. And if you do want to chase it along that line, make sure that you're getting as low color as you can, if that's something that you're interested in trying out.
Okay.
Cool. If I could throw in one other thing, there was a lot of talk that I've heard also about nitrogen. So maybe trying to find malts that are low in fan. Mm-hmm. Or are you're not adding any DAP, you know, you're trying to really.
Interesting. All right.
I've heard a lot of these lices are.
Let's do this. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, I want to hear more about why free amino nitrogen is a problem for the thiolized yeast, or not a problem, but, you know, it's something that controls, is one of the dials for controlling the thiols you get out of a thiolized yeast. We'll be back right after this.
Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on two gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high temperature March pump, and either a top tier gas burner or the new boil coil electric heater. The Brew Easy adapter lid allows the pots to stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20 gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy All Grain Brewing System. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new BrewEasy. Easy.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, we're back. We're talking with Adam Mills about thiolized yeast. The question that Michael brought up was, the point that Michael brought up was that you've heard that the amount of nitrogen in the wort will have an effect on the ability of the yeast to free up the thiols from the malt. Tell me about it.
Well, so, I mean, I've actually heard a good talk from, Laura Burns, and she talks a lot about, like, they don't really necessarily have a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things yet to be determined on the mechanisms, but they have noticed that when you have higher concentrations of nitrogen, you do get a pretty good inhibition of that bound thiol release mechanism or a reaction. So they recommended, and then even in the new IPA, he mentions that with adding diammonium phosphate, you end up with they ended up seeing less free thiols in the finished beer because. And they only surmise that there's a nitrogen concentration that's inhibiting the reaction.
And I would wonder, is it because, you know, the more free amino nitrogen you have in your wort, you know, the yeast will just focus on taking that up. And, you know, you can get you know, that affects fermentation considerably. If you add a bunch of extra nutrient to an all malt wort, you're going to get, you know, a hot fermentation where, you know, you produce all these high alcohols or hot alcohols. So I imagine maybe the yeast are...
I would think it might come down to like a selectivity thing, like you said, where they might be producing this beta lyase to cleave bound thiol so they can use the cysteine, and they want that little bit of protein that contains nitrogen and stuff. So if they don't need it, then maybe they're not producing any enzymes for it. So you get less. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
All right. Interesting. Adam, have you, and Michael, have you experimented with thiolized yeast and, different base malts or different hops or?
Yeah, I've been playing with them for a little bit since the beginning of the year, and we ended up running them as the base strain for a packaged IPA that we were putting out on store shelves. And it's an interesting thing. I haven't tweaked too much around with the base malt stuff. I do have an industry friend of mine, Chris Schneff, up at Stormcloud Brewing in Michigan, has ran quite a bit of trials just testing out base malt. So essentially taking a blonde ale, a 20 IBU blonde ale, and different malts, fermenting them out, 5% beer with, I believe he was running Heliogazer at them, mm-hmm. which is a little, one of the more expressive, if you were to compare it to like a Star Party or Cosmic Punch from Omega, the Heliogazer is kind of those yeast on steroids when it comes to unlocking thiols. And he was saying he was saying that it's definitely worth it. I don't have a real pilot system at the place that I was brewing at the time. And that's one of the times where it'd be really nice to have that, one barrel system to where you can turn out some different things. But he was really suggesting to chase that and see what you can, because he did find definitely differences between those beers.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, have you experimented with the thiolized yeasts at all?
Yeah, so I've been pretty heavy on the Tropicale yeast from White Labs. I had kind of a running hypothesis that non-GMO yeast that express these molecules naturally might produce a more well-rounded, natural tasting flavor. So I've been really mm-hmm. going for that. I worry that, some of these adjuncts and GMO products might produce almost an artificial or too the concentration gets high enough where it's almost like, I know with 4MMP, if you get too high, it can get real catty, or, I can only imagine like 3MHA, you can start getting like just over the top kind of cloyingly tropical probably. So I've been trying to keep the balance, and then I've been trying it with different hops, definitely like, the big name hops, but then also I'm really going to get into those cheaper hops that are known for bound thiol content and try to unlock some of that with my next
beer. Using those on the mash side, maybe, are you thinking, or yeah, still like late boil?
Yeah, you might have heard the same stuff from Laura as well about mash hopping, and sure. I'm jumping in. Yeah, actually, I've got this crazy idea. My mother lives down the road, and she's got a big Cascade vine, so I'm thinking I'm going to pick fresh Cascade and throw it in the mash, see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Try to push some for my, it's a hazy double I'm going to do. So
that's an interesting hypothesis too, though, thinking about how that expression might come off between the GMO and non-GMO approaches with that yeast.
I haven't done a lot of thiolized yeast fermentation, but what I've done with the GMO versions, It's different. I'll say, it won't say it's unnatural, but I have not tasted, when I taste those beers, I'm just like, what hop combination made this? And I can't imagine what it is. It seems a little odd in that way. So it's interesting, Michael, that you were saying that. And I tried to get out of Chris White the actual blend of yeast that are in that Tropicale, but I think
nothing.
Well, Travis was asking if it's got Belgian yeast in it, and I don't think it does. I think he was saying no, but then he was just like, "Oh, I got to look it up." And then we got talking about something else, so he didn't look it up. But, you know, my question, you know, I was only going to reveal if it had Belgian yeast in it or not.
That's okay. All.
I gotta keep secrets, you know, Chris White. If
don't want to be.
I mean, there's all sorts of secrets, you know, that I gotta keep. Yeah, just imagine what these guys are doing.
Well, and to what you're saying, Jamil, do you find that passion fruit note? Sometimes I find it very like very flat. Like it's I don't know. Like it's because when you're saying that, it's weird. Yeah, like maybe there's a lack of layer to that thiol expression. Sometime is that kind of what you're saying?
Maybe, but I think it's also you know, acid related, because if you add passion fruit to a beer, you know, once that the sugars, the fructose that's in there ferments out, you get you know, it's a bit of a tart fruit, the passion fruit. It's got quite a bit of acid. And I think that may be missing in some of that. So maybe, you know, you need to adjust the pH on a beer you might be doing or something like that to get a more natural expression. Or maybe it's missing the top note. I don't know. I do know that I do believe that the actual fruit, if you're trying to get passion fruit notes, the best way of getting them is to add passion fruit.
Yes.
Well, what do you know?
Right. So... you know, when you're adding hops to get passion fruit, there are hops with quite a bit of passion fruit character to them, but they're not passion fruit either.
Sure.
But they have a taste and an aroma that we are familiar with now after years of brewing, trying to get passion fruit in beers using hops. And the thiolyzed yeast what it's producing is I don't think any of the producers of these yeasts are saying, oh, this is passion fruit. They're saying it's passion fruit-like notes. Sure. They're just trying to describe it. Yeah. And so it has a different character. It's got other layers in it that are not the same as adding passion fruit or using these passion fruit hops.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what we're experiencing. And we just need to decide, you know, how much we like it or not.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
What levels to use it. So it's quite an interesting area of exploration. Have either of you done anything to try and regulate the level of these thiol precursors and the amount of thiols in there in the finished beer?
Yeah, you know, there's a few ways you can do it, and we kind of hinted at one earlier, and it's interesting because I know some people are using these thiolized strains in hazy type builds for hazy beers, and there's some things about the kind of standard build for hazy IPA, and maybe I'm talking a bit too broadly, but you know, a lot of hazy IPAs are going to have, you know, anywhere from 15 to 25% or more of, you know, a flaked product, a white wheat, something like that, or a malted wheat. And when you're introducing those adjuncts into those beers, they don't have a precursor in the same way that base malt does. Mm-hmm. So kind of that somewhat traditional, we'll say traditional for something that's pretty recent, but some of those that classic type hazy grist bill. If you are going that direction, it is going to be dialing down at least the malt contribution of thiol precursor. You know, that's one way for sure.
The thiol precursors are mainly in the husk of the grain. Is that where they're coming from?
That's a really good question. I don't know if it's related to husk, but that makes a lot of sense. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
As far as I know, it has to do with the proteins in the malt. And I don't know if that's in like the acrospot. I mean, I could get all on the anatomy of a malt grain, but as far as I understand, it's a part of those large chain proteins that, you know, these thiols get somehow bound into.
Well, a lot of these wheats have higher protein levels than, you know, your regular base grains. What they're missing is husk.
Sure.
Yeah. True that.
So I know, you know, a lot of the tannins, in malt is coming from the husk, and that's where, you know, why you get a bit of methanol in your fermentations is because of the husk of the barley malt.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially like wood. And so you get some flavors from that. I think that's one of the things. It's very interesting that you brought that up, Adam, about wheat kind of diluting down some of the things. I think people don't give enough thought to what the husk of the barley gives to the beer and flavor. There is some flavor contribution to that. Most people look at it as just essentially, you know, filtration bed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fascinating as well. I think there's a whole slew of things to explore that way.
Sure.
What other ways of adjusting? You know, you mentioned mash hopping. Certain types of hops have more precursors than others. What hops are those?
That's what it seems. I mean, just kind of off the top, some hops that you wouldn't necessarily think are going to be bringing some of these tropical flavors. Things like Saaz, Hallertau, Cascade tends to be that Middlefru. There's some in that range. I think maybe Calypso is on that list too.
That's one
where they seem like you can get those into the mash. And then rely on carrying that, having that carry over into your finished beer. It was one of the ideas I was considering running Heliogazer as this base strain for this production IPA that I was going to do. And so I had thought about, you know, well, maybe if I could do like a small blonde or wheat beer as a yeast grower for this. So it would be easier if you're going to be doing a later fermentation hop, something like that. So it would be a way of keeping the beer around. So utilizing that mash hop beer just as kind of an easy session beer for the tap room, but then really using it as a yeast grower to have consistently fresh pitches of yeast for something that you would be doing maybe on the hazy side.
Now, what yeasts are available for the home brewer? Are they all available for home brewers and pro brewers? Are there any that are pro brewer only?
That's a good question. I know the Omega stuff seems to be available to everybody. Is the Berkeley stuff as well?
I don't think so.
Okay. And I think BSI might have some as well, but I don't know if they're available to folks on the homebrew side. I didn't realize that White Labs was doing or had a thiol blend that they were making as well. That's interesting. And that's not on the genetically modified side.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I know there's also Omega only uses cisgenic modifications where they're only trying to get that expression that from a yeast to another yeast versus, I don't know if that Heliogazer stuff uses.
They're using
transgenic modifications. So
using CRISPR to take, you know, genes from
IRC7 or something with that. I think that's what they're messing with.
Another yeast. Berkeley, I know, has been using genes from actual fruit. Like, you know, if they want blackberry character, they go to a blackberry plant and they take the genes from the plants and use that. I'm pretty sure that's correct. Don't sue me over it if I'm wrong, but I think that's the case in their modification. And then, like Michael's saying, White Labs has their Tropicale is not genetically modified, because genetically modified yeast is an issue for, you know, especially like our friends in England. They're not allowed to use that. I mean, home brewers could, but you know, commercial brewers can't, because you know people have their concerns. It doesn't bother me at all, but I understand if people are, you know, reticent to ingest something that was genetically modified, but you know, doesn't bother me.
Yeah, like I said,
things I'll consume, you know.
Yeah, all my considerations are flavor based, so yeah, I'm looking for the best flavor. I don't care if it's GMO or not.
Yeah, if a turd tasted good, you'd be hampering turds.
GMO or not. GMO turds.
On that note, Why don't we take another short break? this is the kind of content that Blickman is happy to sponsor. We'll be back right after this.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're having a good time talking about thiolized yeast. So yeast that will essentially break off these tasty little pieces of proteins or whatever it is in malt and in hops and produce a more fruit forward beer for you. And we're talking about how Omega has some, BSI, I guess, has some, White Labs has their thiolized blend. Tell me more. What's the best beer style for this technology or this product or this technique?
Sure. And I think with a lot of times, sometimes, you know, we have various products hit the market. And I think ever since, probably originally, Simcoe was one of the ones that made that splash once Vinny popularized that hop. And then there's Citra Mosaic. And, and people have really been looking for that next big thing. And, I think Phantasm hit, which mm-hmm. which leads into this. And that's something that we can talk about in a little bit. But, everybody is always looking to make the most aggressive version of these as you can. And I understand wanting to do that from understanding the ceiling of what these things do. But I think ultimately it's more about understanding, maybe how to fold this in an enjoyable way, right? Like, can we drive nuance, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than maybe blowing the top off. That might be the best use for some of this stuff. And so, I think your gut can tell you, hey, yeah, let's take it to IPA. And there's definitely things that you can do with this strain, with those adjuncts to fold some nuance or even step into the forefront with those beers. But I think there's a lot of other beers that you can create interesting things with. I think it would be interesting to play with these yeasts and actually making fruit beers. So beers where you are both using real fruit and some of this thiolized capacity, right? So if you're looking to make something, tropical, you can run with passion fruit, or maybe you can get a blend of different things. Because we are saying guava, passion fruit, grapefruit. If you're looking for a little bit of a medley with something like that, I think that works great. If you want to go non-traditional and, maybe some of our style guys would be really uncomfortable with it, but I think it might be interesting to try to fold into low levels of some yeast forward beers that don't typically feature that flavor profile. For instance, a Belgian Golden Strong can kind of have a white fruit component to it, whether that mm-hmm. be pear, flesh of apple, things like that. Maybe pushing a little bit of thiol character into that may be interesting, and that's one of the things you can do too. I have friends that actually work with blends of this yeast. So they'll mm-hmm. use a base yeast. They work with Omega and they get certain percentages, added. And that's one of the ways that they're dialing up and down that intensity, right? But I do think it's important to kind of maybe step out of the IPA, the hop forward type look at something like this, and then see what are the other interesting beer styles that we can create some nuance with a product like that.
And Michael, have you been mainly producing hazy IPA using thiolized yeast or anything else?
For me, I've only been using it for my hazy so far, but I actually, in kind of my prep for the show today, I really heard some really interesting ideas about using these for, the New Zealand Pilsner and like kind of pushing a little more fruit character, but, so you do a little mash hopping or I've heard of like, blonde ales where they're doing a little bit of the stylized yeast, and like you said, kind of dialing it in. Not going to the ceiling and really trying to develop nuance and balance, but kind of like some of these beers, like you said, the style people might get a little bit sweaty on the brow, but you can do pretty much anything you want to add a little bit of that kind of fruity flavor, or even if you're kind of going more for that blackcurrant, it's all in your hop selection and then your process to try to push either one. And you can, with these stylized yeasts, push it a little further and make it present in beers that you wouldn't expect, which I think is really cool. And I'm already got the gears turning on like a New Zealand pills or some sort of thioli blonde.
And you can really look at it in the same way, like, you know, before we did all this stuff with yeast like this, it's like, you know, there'd be times where, you know, we could decide, okay, do we want a neutral American ale strain or do we want something a little bit more expressive on the British side, right? And you could almost dial it into a thought process like that. Like, it's not going to be in the forefront of the beer, but what if you leverage these yeasts to almost play like the ester type role in a beer, right? Like definitely. Something that's more subtle, something dialed down, but, you know, something that's still there, right? And just, you know, creating layers.
Definitely.
Interesting. So let's say somebody's just starting out with thiolized yeast. You guys, you know, what would, you know, your average home brewer wants to get into thiolized yeast? What strain should they first start with? And what kind of recipe, you know, should they put together?
I mean, it kind of depends on what you're looking to do. If you're looking to, you know, actually, you, like, hey, let's find out what this is and let's look for the ceiling on this, right? Let's try to blow the top off with that. You know, look at something hop forward. You know, you can put it into that style. I would recommend, if you are trying to push the upper limits on this, and this is a way you can dial that expression up and down, one of the ways that you can push back thiol expression is by getting too much green matter into the beer. This is one of the reasons why you see a suggestion of maybe using, you know, mash hopping, things like that. But from what it looks like is the more green matter is in contact with these beers, the more it tends to, whether it's going to be some sloppy science terminology here, but whether it pulls them out or suppresses them. But that is one of the things. So leaning on an advanced hop product, a cryo might be a way to try to maximize those things because you're removing green matter from the equation. So if you are looking at, you know, trying to blow the top off in that way, chase something like that. But if you're looking for maybe just straight line, almost making a beer for purely for a scientific sake to figure out what's actually happening, maybe it is better to pull it back to a blonde type beer, right? And try out the mash hopping and even pair in some of those hot products later. You know what I mean? That may have less green matter in play. So there's a few different ways that you could take it. What are your thoughts?
I guess for me, I always recommend when people are trying this out, use it in a recipe you've made several times and try to get a sensory of like, okay, I like this beer. I've always liked this beer. I've made it for years. Like my friend Kevin, he makes this killer hazy and he's always used Boddington's or juice, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I had him try the Tropicale and, you know, these beers couldn't be, you know, they were very different. And so it was really cool to see that and kind of trying that out. I thought was a really cool way to experiment with these yeasts is to go with something you've already done and really see how it changes.
Have you seen that you need to pull back dry hop levels on those beers? Have you played with that at all? So you said kind of taking a standard hazy recipe, one that you know, and typically those are going to be pretty aggressively dry hopped. I found it interesting that by pulling back the dry hop in the IPA that I was making for Store Shelf, that was when the passion fruit character really started to step forward. I was almost over dry hopping for if the goal is thiol expression. Have you found that at all? Have you played with that at all?
I have not yet, but that's definitely a good point about the green matter. I've seen that in several articles about there's some sort of mechanism pulling that out. But I will say though, for us and our experiences where we'd make a hazy with Boddington's and then go to the thiol, you kind of just, they're almost just as fruity, but they're a lot less the grapefruit. They're a lot less citrus, and they do become more of that guava passion fruit kind of almost, they almost have kind of a more tropical, almost a sweeter body to them than kind of that tart grapefruit or kind of orange or something, you know? So it's really interesting to see this change, but I definitely, as I get more into these and I use it more often, I kind of dabble back and forth between my crazy experiments and then trying to make a classic style. Like I just made a Märzen and I tried to do it like Reinheitsgebot pretty much and see if I can't hit that. So I go back and forth, but yeah, I definitely want to try that. So.
Sure.
Are there other tips or tricks for people that are, you know, starting out with this kind of yeast?
You know, I would also, something that we haven't talked too much about just yet is we haven't talked really about some of the, you know, non-traditional adjuncts as far as something like Phantasm goes, essentially grape skins. And are these derived from New Zealand, if I'm correct? Is that the base source for Phantasm?
Yes, I believe it's a product because, again, those wines that were made down there became super synonymous with their tropical characteristics. So then it was almost like they decided to take that next step.
Sure. Yeah. And so, you can fold that in. I know Berkeley, I'm not sure if it's available on the home side, but I know on the pro side, they have like a thiol boost liquid that you can add that, which is essentially liquid Phantasm, but it is, it has measured amounts of precursor in it, so that's some stuff that you can play with. But you know, big picture, almost every element that you can think of will play into how these thiols are going to be expressing everything from fermentation temperature. From what I understand, you know, if you're looking to push up on the high side, maybe fermenting a little bit on the cooler side may help you retain some of those thiols. Maybe if you're ramping that temp up to the higher end of the spectrum, you might be, you know, essentially blowing off some of those notes. It's one of those things where if you are looking for fruit forward beers, it is one of those where you just got to give it a shot and maybe go with what Michael was talking about. Take that IPA recipe that you like, and then fold that yeast in and see what it does for it, because it is an interesting thing.
Paul had sent in via email. And I'll tell you, if you guys have questions for Brew Strong, you can send them in to brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com. And we're getting to all the new ones that come in. We're getting to them really quick. and we're still mixing in, you know, a lot of the ones from a decade ago. So don't worry, we'll get to every question, but we are getting to the new ones quicker. Is one of my focuses now. But Paul had written in not long ago, literally the title of his email was 2023 IPA advice. But one of the questions he had was, you know, thiol yeasts and Phantasm versus Kvike or traditional yeasts.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting because we kind of touched on, you know, before when we were talking about, you know, what people think are going to be the next big thing on the brewing side. And there is that time period with Kvike. And I think Kvike is great. There is a brewery that I worked at that was, we'll say, very rustic. And I turned probably about 150 batches with various strains of Kvike. And it definitely has it has its use cases and whatnot. But you know, I would tend to lean toward, I think you can achieve, potentially more interesting things maybe, with the thiolized side of things and incorporating some things like Phantasm and what we talked about before, various approaches as far as the hops, advanced hop products, cryo hops. I just feel like it's more expressive. Than maybe what you get out of the Kvike side of things. Again, maybe it won't be your thing going full bore with it. But I think it's more different than the Kvike approaches. But that's just my take.
Yeah, my take is I love how many options we're getting. And it's kind of as a craft brewer, you have all of these tools in your tool bag now, and you can, depending on what you're going for, like I make it's a smash hazy pale ale, but I use Voss at Kvike. And then with the Lotus hops, I don't know if there's just a synergy there. I don't go crazy with the temperature. I'm around 80. So it's not this funky Kvike beer. It's kind of got a nice, real good, nice orange citrus note to it. And, you know, those are things you can play with. And then I kind of also see the future going forward is I think blending of yeast and looking for expressions that don't, you can't get with single yeast fermentations. Like you said, going 30% thyle and then maybe 10% Kvike and then mixing in some Boddingtons or even trying some other strains and really making your own blend and becoming kind of that mad scientist. And
well, that's just, actually what my buddy's been playing with. He's been playing with specifically blends of, I believe, Cosmic Punch and Voss, you know, the Voss Kvike. You know what I mean? And using that as a way to dial that up and down too. Yeah, I think yeast blending is a great approach. So I don't think it necessarily has to be either or. Right. Because I think you bring up a good point. Yeah, there's a lot of room to play right there.
Yeah, yeast blends are really becoming more and more of a thing now. I mean, there was a time where, you know, nobody wanted to blend yeast. It was all about pure culture, pure strain, one yeast, that was it. You never had anything else. And now, you know, that's something of real interest to modern brewers is, you know, blending yeasts. So quite fascinating. We got some questions coming in from the chat. One of the things, if you're listening live, you can, you know, on Facebook, you click on the comment section, link there below the video, and it will pop up a comments page there where you can ask your questions live and we will get to them on the air. What we're going to do right now, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we will have a couple of questions from the chat right after this.
Learning to brew has never been so disgusting. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're talking thiolyzed yeast and having a lot of fun here. Simon from Italy, he is a professional brewer. He wants to get into thiol beer soon. But in the EU, this kind of yeasts are forbidden. I think that's why we mentioned the White Labs Tropical yeast is something that is not forbidden because it's not genetically modified. So I would suggest, you know, trying that yeast for sure. He said he wants to go obviously hazy and the which is the most aromatic potential style. Hazy base of malts and flakes, mash hopping with potential hops like Saaz, then going for shorter boil, same proteins, and Phantasm for the whirlpool. His comment is thiols should just boost up tropical notes and not overdo thiols. You can get some unpleasant notes if you overdo it. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, you know, and he was naming, you know, all the big ways to really, you know, hit the top end. You know what I mean? He's looking at getting, you know, precursor in the mash, precursor in whirlpool with Phantasm, different things like that. So, yeah, if you are looking to moderate that impression a little bit, you definitely don't want to be throwing the kitchen sink at it. You know what I mean? Because maybe you will get that note that's just too much for you with what you want to be doing.
Well, and some of there's some yeast out there that they do this, the releasing of thiols. Isn't that right, Michael?
There's plenty of strains that have free thiol content. I mean, those are more your big name, big expensive per pound strains like Citra, Mosaic.
Oh, I mean, yeasts. That actually unlock thiols from wherever they're bound.
Oh, yeah. So there are natural strains. I know on White Labs, they have a big write-up about their tropical yeast, and they actually have their assay chart with the different strains and their relative thiolization. And you can go check it out. There's some pretty interesting ones on there that are higher, lower, less, more. You can make your own tropical blend. I mean, mm-hmm. I think what they do is they probably targeted it and then tried to get the right flavor for you, so you weren't using a lot of like YPL 300 and ending up with a banana bomb on sure. top of your, sure. your thiol bomb. sure. So yeah, there's some,
now, some interesting I imagine ones out there. It's also possible that, you know, certain yeasts in a blend, since we're talking about blending yeast, actually work in concert and maybe do a better job of unlocking thiols than the individual strains by themselves. Is that a possibility?
From what I understand, the thiolization happens intracellularly. So I don't know that they would have much interaction with each other in terms of the different strains, like, and then affecting their own biochemistry. Maybe on a, that's where biology is wild, man. You don't really know. The only thing to do would be to try it. And just, yeah. I think at our level, at least, to try it and see where you end up.
That's one of the beauties of being a homebrewer is it's not that expensive to try. And you can have a lot of fun with it. Also in the chat, one more question. Eric, he asks, I heard that if you're using thiol yeast, you should back off on dry hopping. Is that true?
Yeah, it's really something I found. I ended up pulling a dry hop. I had a standard, you know, house hazy that I was doing for some time. And that was receiving about 4 pounds per barrel dry hop. And when I used Heliogazer with it, the thiol expression was there, but it was definitely in the background. It was still very much a hop forward beer as far as the expression rather than thiol forward. And then when I made a different hazy, but still a very similar build, and I pulled back green matter on it, one, because it was just less hops overall. I pulled that beer back to about 1.5 pounds per barrel in dry hop. And that's when the thiol character really jumped. In the beer. Now, part of that could also be the fact that maybe there was not the overall hop intensity competing with the thiol character as well. But I have seen that, and I've seen that suggestion be offered by Dr. Burns and some others, that maybe look at dialing that total volume down of dry hop, and that might help that thiol character to pop a bit more.
So the thought is that either the thiols are binding to the green matter, or the intensity of the hop expression is masking the thiols that have been released by the yeast. Does that sum it up? Either one of you?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what you guys are saying is it seems like there's a... I will also add, too, in that I've heard there was a really good podcast with Laura, and she was mentioning that they noticed with T90 in the Whirlpool, they had a big reduction in thiols. So there's some interesting, you know, almost empirical evidence that, you know, if you use some of those fancier products like Salvo or Cryo or
Incognito, Spectrum,
Incognito, and you try to minimize green matter in the Whirlpool, I mean, there's interesting, data.
Anything else to on the subject of thiolized yeast?
One thing I would just talk about sulfur real quick.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sulfur is one of those things that can pop off. And I do believe, and Michael, and you may both have a better idea than me, but are these thiol side compounds, I believe they are sulfur related, correct?
Yeah, thiol is like an alcohol, but instead of oxygen, it's a sulfur. I don't think that they're really, you know, next to those, the same... like a sulfides that produce like cabbage or vegetable or you know, they're not going to be in that same neighborhood.
Sure. I haven't had a ton of issue with sulfur, but you will see some stuff on forums, some people posting and saying that they're getting, you know, heavily sulfury beers out of this. Obviously you want to be doing everything you can as far as, you know, yeast management, yeast health, appropriate pitching rates, everything like that. But, they do say that sometimes these beers will kick extra sulfur. And one of the keys with them is giving them, if you do run into that, a healthy conditioning period, they'll say, you know, you don't have to necessarily think about conditioning as far as like a full on lagering, like you would for a traditional German pils or something like that, but making sure that that beer has enough time to take care of that sulfur is something that might be a bit of something to look out for on the back end of these fermentations.
Well, there you go. Very interesting subject. I appreciate you guys participating and revealing key things about thialized yeast. Thank you to our sponsor, Blickman Engineering, paying for the show so you don't have to. If you enjoy the show, make sure you send him a nice email at feedback@BlickmanEngineering.com. His name's John Blickman, the owner of the company. He's been supporting, you know, homebrewers and pro brewers for a long time. So just tell him thank you. It's the least you can do. You enjoyed this hour of programming. Until then, everybody, brew strong.
Brew strong.